Hello, everybody. Welcome to Season 5, Episode 3 of Victims of Fun. We are live somewhere on the west coast of Florida. We're in a nice little seaside coffee shop thing. Got a nice little piano in the background and some people mulling around having coffee and stuff. It's a beautiful sunny day in Florida. It's about 91 degrees. And this is Victims of Fun, and I've got myself a pina colada here. It's quite nice. Yeah, it's pretty good. So I hope everybody's doing okay today. It's been a hectic week. Hectic couple weeks. That's why I haven't been, you know, usually I do podcasts every day or every other day and just load them up. But I haven't been recently because, you know, it was a big move back from Japan. I got some other stuff going on. But, you know, I'm trying to do these once or twice a week and eventually get back to my extreme amounts of recording and stuff. And as usual, I want to thank the fine folks at Anchor FM, the best podcast software on the planet, and the fine folks at Blue Microphone for this wonderful Blue Yeti Snowball microphone, Seagate, solid state drive people, because Victims of Fun is stored on a portable Seagate SSD drive, and of course the fine folks at Apple for this beautiful brand new MacBook Air M1, which Victims of Fun is made on. And remember, if you want to email me, you can email me at victimsoffun@mail.com. And you can follow us on Anchor or Spotify or Pandora. Make sure you hit that like and support button. You can throw me some cash. Notice nobody's throwing me cash, and you really need to start doing that before I start finding out the identity of people listening and coming to your house. So there you go. You can also follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter by just doing a quick search of Victims of Fun, and you'll see the logo is common across all social media. So when you see the Blue Yeti microphone with the yellow verbiage saying Victims of Fun, that's me. So there you go. And so I got up this morning, I had breakfast, I had a Bloody Mary. That was my breakfast. But I remember thinking to myself, you know, growing up, you know, because I'm going to be 53 in June, and growing up, you know, it was all, you know, cereal and stuff that's like sugary, and stuff that I never should have been. It was bad for you. You know, it always struck me as funny when you read these cereal boxes as fortified with 9 vitamins and iron and blah, blah, blah. Like, it's supposed to be healthy, but then the main ingredient is sugar. It's like 6 pounds of sugar. But I remember I used to eat a cereal called Quisp. And there was a little Martian on the cover of it. He's got a little, almost like a beanie propeller top to him and big wide anime eyes. So I used to eat that. It was called Quisp. And Quisp had a frenemy, and I can't remember the exact type of cereal this was, but I want to say there was a kangaroo on it, type of thing. I really should Google that and find out, but I used to eat Quisp. And then there was this horrible cereal, which actually is a collector's item now. If you can get a box of it unsealed from, like, eBay, it's worth quite a bit. It's called Freakies. And Freakies were just really almost like mutant, disgusting, Lovecraftian-type monsters that were cereal pieces. They come in all different colors, and each Freaky had a backstory, and there was a whole plot line of Freakies. I think the idea of I don't know if it was General Mills or Post, they wanted to create like a whole Freakies universe, like an animated show and plush toys and everything else. But the Freakies were just so incredibly ugly. You know, I mean, there was this one Freaky, and he honestly looked like broccoli. He was green and he looked like broccoli. Now, what little kid, I'm talking like 6, 7 years old, is going to want to freaking eat broccoli for breakfast? Because he's going to see that. And little kids don't know, you know. They're going to see something that looks like broccoli, and they're going to go, man, I ain't touching this. It's broccoli. Oh, no, honey. This is nice sugar. No, no, Mom. You're trying to get me to eat broccoli. I ain't doing it. I'll call Grandma. But But these freakies look like broccoli. And I think they started in the 60s. If you go on YouTube and just, you know, search for freakies, and you'll see the commercials, you'll see the cereal. I mean, the freakies were just... And I think I had a box or two, and I was like, man, this stuff's really good. I mean, it was good, but it was weird. And I remember Pink Panther. Pink Panther had his own cereal. Remember the Pink Panther? Pink Panther was based on the, you know, the movie series Pink Panther with Peter Sellers. And actually, a bit of movie history, trivia for you. The title Pink Panther does not refer to Inspector Clouseau, who was the detective played by Peter Sellers. He was not nicknamed the Pink Panther. The Pink Panther was the diamond that was stolen in the first Pink Panther movie, which wasn't even called the Pink Panther. It was called A Shot in the Dark. And Inspector Clouseau wasn't even the lead character, and he was like a supporting character. And the diamond that people were trying to steal was named the Pink Panther. But Peter Sellers' portrayal of Clouseau was so over the top and popular, they brought him back for his own movie. I don't know what the hell happened. Maybe they thought that naming the movie Inspector Clouseau would not play well outside of Europe, because, you know, it's French. And so they just kept calling it the Pink Panther. But he himself, the character, is never referred to as the Pink Panther. That was the diamond in the first movie. Everybody says, oh, he's the Pink Panther. No, he's not. And I remember there was a Jeopardy question in, rest in peace, Alice Trebek, by the way. And I remember there was a Jeopardy question. It was, this bumbling French detective lucked his way through European high society solving crimes, played by British comedian Peter Sellers. Who was it? What was the character's name? And everybody answered the Pink Panther, and it was wrong, because his name is Inspector Clouseau. But everybody answered the Pink Panther, and Alex was like, no, that's incorrect. The name of the character is Clouseau. He's never referred to as the Pink Panther. So anyway, the Pink Panther then somehow became a Saturday morning cartoon. And there was actually a panther that was pink. The animation style in the Pink Panther cartoon was incredible. It was very artistic. It wasn't typical Saturday morning children's cartoon. The animation style. And the Pink Panther never spoke. And they played that theme music by Burt Bacharach. You know, dun-dun, 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 dun-dun. And the Pink Panther, the character who was actually a pink anthropomorphic panther, would just get in a whole bunch of series of misadventures, and sometimes he was chased or bullied or tried or something by a cartoon version of Inspector Clouseau, who looked nothing like Inspector Clouseau. He was actually very short, with a mustache, and he almost didn't even have a lower half of the body. It was just like his head and like a pair of legs, or like I said, the animation was over the top. And a lot of the Pink Panther cartoons had no dialogue because it was all very European. A lot of visual comedy, which was very, very big in Europe. It still is. But in the 60s and 70s, you know, non-verbiage comedy was huge over there. And then you had some supporting characters in the Pink Panther cartoons. I remember there was an aardvark or an anteater always trying to eat this family of ants, which is very traumatic. But, so Pink Panther, the cartoon guy, had his own cereal. And basically it was Fruity Pebbles before it was Fruity Pebbles, and it would turn the milk pink. Okay, so you pour your, and they look like Fruity Pebbles, except they're pink. And you pour it in the cereal bowl, and you add your milk, and the milk turns pink. And you have what basically looks like a bowl of Pepto-Bismol with cereal in it. But it was good. It was good. And then you had, I used to love the monster cereals. You had Frankenberry and Count Chocula. And I don't count the later ones they added, like the Mummy and the Werewolf and all. And that's all bullshit. But I loved Booberry. Not Blueberry, Booberry. And Booberry cereal was actually Blueberry. And it was a ghost, and the voice was based on Peter Lorre. And he always scared Frankenberry and Count Chocula. Like, they were afraid of him. I'm thinking to myself, okay, here's a vampire who's basically, you know, vampires are the apex predators of the monster universe. I don't mean like Godzilla and stuff. I mean like, you know, human-type monsters. And then you have basically the second most powerful monster in Frankenstein there. And they're scared of a ghost. It's like, well, what are you scared of? Frankenstein's technically dead because he's made of dead parts. And Dracula is dead and can't be killed unless you're putting a stake through his heart. But Booberry scared them. And I'm like, wait a minute, you're a vampire. You're like the Prince of Darkness. You're like, you know, strike fear into everybody. And you're scared of a ghost that sounds like Peter Lorre. And all he's trying to do is get you to eat his cereal. And Booberry was great because I love blueberries. And it turned the milk blue. And Count Chocula turned the milk brown, and Frankenberry turned the milk pink. Whatever. But, you know, I can't do Peter Lorre's voice. Like, this is Booberry. Oh, would you like some Booberry cereal? And then Count Chocula be like, oh, blah, blah, it's a ghost. I must run, even though I am a vampire and ghosts can't hurt me. And Frankenberry was just an idiot. He'd be like, duh, I'm Frankenberry. Yeah. You know, what kind of crap is that? So, I remember eating those. And I don't know if they still make this or not. And this might have been just a Northeast thing, because I'm originally from New Jersey. But there was a cereal called King Vitamin. And I loved King Vitamin. And the whole thing behind King Vitamin was supposed to be that it had more vitamins than normal cereal. I don't know how the hell that happened. How they got more vitamins in the cereal than normal cereal. But that was the whole shtick behind King Vitamin. And they had a guy who was... And the guy who was on the box was supposedly some semi-famous old school comedian from vaudeville. I don't remember his name. But what I loved about King Vitamin, and if you're my age, if you're in your 50s, you remember this. And Captain Crunch was big on this too. These cereals would rip the roof of your mouth to shreds. And you would have little pieces of skin hanging down from the roof of your mouth, like just behind your eye teeth. And it was just like, ugh. The King Vitamin was big on that. It was like eating, you know, broken glass. It was really good, though. But Captain Crunch was notorious for that. Because you had Captain Crunch, and he had a pirate friend. And I don't remember the name of the pirate. And I don't remember what... his cereal... I'm trying to remember the whole taste of the pirate cereal, because Captain Crunch was just normal sugary cereal, the normal Captain Crunch, and his pirate cereal, I forget, I want to say it was cinnamon or something. But then you had the two greatest cereals probably ever created in the history of the planet. You had Captain Crunch peanut butter cereal, which the original mascot was an elephant who had the captain's hat on. And this stuff is, oh, God, it's just so good. And then you had Crunch Berries, which had some sort of weird-looking yellow creature with red spots on it, like chicken pox. And he was the Crunch Berry Beast. Now Captain Crunch is on the cover of all the boxes. I guess he said, enough of this shit, this is my cereal. He probably wasn't getting paid enough royalties. I don't know what happened to the pirate. Maybe he just finally got thrown in jail. I don't even see the pirate cereal anymore. But what I loved is years later, they started selling Crunch Berry with just the berries. And you can imagine what a diabetic coma that would put you in. It's like Lucky Charms, okay? Aye, they're trying to steal me Lucky Charms. You know, Lucky's Irish. I want to know what Lucky did during the Troubles, like in Northern Ireland. Was Lucky like, did he try to blow up British school children or something? I mean, I don't know. Was he a loyalist or what was he? But, see, oh God, I'm going to get hate mail for that from all the Irish people if they're not too drunk to like write in. Anyway, so you had Lucky and his Lucky Charms, and then years later, Lucky was, had the marshmallows. Pink hearts, yellow moons, orange stars, green clovers, and then they added blue diamonds, and now there's like 10 other types of marshmallows. And eventually they started selling just the marshmallows. And I'm like, are you kidding me? You're like, you're going to make a generation of kids obese, which they already are, diabetic, which they already are, and give them bad teeth, which means they'll basically be British. Because, you ever see a British guy's teeth? Ugh, like alien. Anyway, great, now I'm going to get hate mail from them. Well, I'm getting the whole United Kingdom after me. Might as well talk about the Welsh and their affinity for relations with sheep. But anyway, at least not bad as a drunken Scotsman. Anyway, so you had Lucky Charms. And so I used to eat that. And Alphabits were like the cereal part of Lucky Charms without the marshmallows, and Alphabits were different letters. And I remember being a little kid trying to spell like obscenities in my cereal bowl. And that's just how it was. If you're a kid, you did stuff like that. Now you'd probably be accused of triggering somebody. You get canceled. And Honeycomb. And they had a song, it was like, Honeycomb Big, yeah, 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 it's not small. No, 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 Honeycomb's got a big, big bite, big, big taste. And I remember they had one where Andre the Giant, rest in peace. Andre the Giant was in the commercial as a giant because Honeycombs were the only cereal big enough for him. I remember they would show a measurement of the Honeycomb cereal because of how big it was. And they were trying to trick people because, when you have a measuring tape, you start, if you want to get a legitimate measurement of something, you start at the one, or at the end of the tape. But they measured it at the 7-inch mark, and they're trying to convince these kids that, like, Honeycomb is 7 inches wide. Because, kids don't know. They're stupid. And a lot of them grow up to be stupid adults. But, And so there was Honeycomb. And believe it or not, I still eat this. I got really into Grape Nuts, and Grape Nuts is like an adult cereal, really, because it wasn't really marketed towards kids, but I just always loved Grape Nuts. I mean, it's like the hard little crunchy Grape Nuts. I mean, there's no grape or nuts in them. I think they're made out of barley or something, but they're really good. They're very filling. They have a lot of energy. They're very healthy. And they were invented by the guy who was the assistant. No, they were invented by C.W. Post himself. C.W. Post was the assistant to Dr. Kellogg from Kellogg's. And what's good is you put Grape Nuts in yogurt and it makes it very crunchy. So, Frosted Flakes, Tony the Tiger, they're great. And of course, everybody ate Wheaties, and everybody remembers that famous box with Bruce Jenner on it, because that's his name, Bruce Jenner. So he was on the box, and then, Michael Jordan, was on the box, and then, I think they put LeBron James on a Wheaties box, but if you didn't look like LeBron James, you weren't allowed to buy it. Anyway, Wheaties were good. I never liked Raisin Bran. Life was okay. Cinnamon Toast Crunch was the bomb. Cinnamon Toast Crunch were these little things, and they had cinnamon on them. And it was supposed to be like eating French toast. And, the thing with Cinnamon Toast Crunch is it got very soggy in milk, and it was kind of like Cinnamon Toast Crunch gruel at that point. Which, whatever. But Cinnamon Toast Crunch was good. And Apple Jacks, which, and Fruit Loops. Fruit Loops were good. Of course, then you had Trix. And the poor rabbit, all the rabbit ever wanted was Trix. And every time he'd get Trix, the kids would take it away and they'd say, "Silly rabbit, Trix are for kids." Well, I'm thinking to myself, you know, what kind of racial bullshit is that? That the rabbit wasn't allowed to eat Trix? I mean, what law? I believe the Constitution protects the right of the rabbit to eat Trix. You know, I mean, come on. Just go to Dollar Tree and buy some Trix. And if these little kids show up and go, "Mr. Rabbit, you can't have these," and you know what you do? You pull out the Glock and, you know, you put them in the ground. That's what you do, Mr. Rabbit. That's how you solve the problem of little kids trying to steal your Trix. But, God, man, I'm getting so much trouble. So you had Trix. I wasn't a big Trix fan. And there was Cocoa Puffs, which basically were Trix but chocolate. And you had this cuckoo bird. And I think his name was Sunny. He's like, "I'm cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs." I'm like, well, you're mentally ill for Cocoa Puffs. He can't say cuckoo anymore because that's not politically correct. So he's mentally ill for... I don't even think you're allowed to say mentally ill. I don't know. You're not allowed to say a lot of stuff anymore. But Cocoa Puffs. And then they had Cookie Crisp. Now, Cookie Crisp, some cereal company had a great idea that, oh, little kids love chocolate chip cookies, so let's make a cereal that looks like chocolate chip cookies. And they had Cookie Crisp. Now, the whole thing with that was you had the Cookie Cop and the Cookie Thief. And the Cookie Thief was always trying to steal and eat Cookie Crisp. And the Cookie Cop was always trying to stop him. Now, I don't think that would work these days because of everything that's been going on in society for the past year and a half. Burn down the cities because, you know, Cookie Cop put 4 slugs at close range into Cookie Crook. And, you know... burn down the city over it, but so you had Cookie Crisp, and of course the Rice Krispies, Snap Crackle Pop. That's what happens when I go to the chiropractor. And then what they did was they made frosted Rice Krispies. Then they made chocolate Rice Krispies, which basically were ripping off the Flintstones cereal, which was Fruity Pebbles and the chocolate one. God, what's the Cocoa Krispies. The Fruity Pebbles are the bomb. There is a donut shop in Florida called Donut King. And I think they're just in Lake County, Florida. But they make a donut that's got Fruity Pebbles on it. So I guess when they're putting the frosting on, before the frosting hardens, they dunk it in Fruity Pebbles. And it's a Fruity Pebble donut. And literally, you can't even smell it without getting diabetes. I mean, Wilford Brimley would love that shit. Because he was all about diabetes. You know, just... yeah, God. And, of course, you know, all these cereals would, like, turn the milk, whatever color the cereal was. And I don't know how... You know, looking back at it, I'm like, how is that safe? You know, how is that safe that it would turn the milk, you know, chocolate or pink or blue or yellow or whatever it was going to do? It was just horrifying to think about. All the, you know, now you look at the ingredients in these things as you're an adult, you're like, oh God, look at all. I mean, how did we, as kids, how did we survive on stuff like that? I mean, there's government regulations that say that the cereals have to have a certain amount of vitamins and everything in it, and they do. But it's like having a baked potato for dinner, and you think it's going to be healthy, and then you put 6 pounds of butter and some melted cheddar cheese and some sour cream on it. It's like making a salad and dumping an entire bottle of Ken's Steakhouse blue cheese dressing on it. It just defeats the purpose. So you have all these cereals that have the government-mandated nutrition, but then they're loaded up with sugar and dyes and everything else, and it's just like... shredded wheat was good. I like that. My favorite hot cereal has always been cream of wheat. I love cream of wheat. I can eat cream of wheat every day. I just don't like making it, because I don't like really making stuff in the morning, except, you know, coffee. But, cream of wheat was always the shiznits. It was always good stuff. But I mean, for breakfast now, I get up and have coffee and I'll have a slice of toast or a banana or my iron supplement, my orange juice, and I still eat Pop-Tarts. Now, here's the thing with Pop-Tarts, and I've gotten into arguments with people over this. And I think it's perfectly acceptable to eat Pop-Tarts that have not been toasted. And some people swear that that's basically blasphemy and you're not supposed to do that. And I said, well, I can do both, but there's nothing wrong with Pop-Tarts that haven't been toasted. That's not how you're supposed to eat them. And my favorite Pop-Tarts are blueberry, but not the frosted ones. And good luck finding non-frosted blueberry Pop-Tarts anymore. You can still find a strawberry with no frosting, but at least everywhere I go here in Florida, in Publix or Winn-Dixie or whatever, it's the blueberry Pop-Tarts are frosting. Like, I don't want that. I want the blueberry Pop-Tarts without frosting. But, you know, it's too much to ask, I guess, you know? It's like, something like that would make me very happy, and I'm denied it. It's just, I don't know what the problem is. Just make my damn Pop-Tarts without any frosting on it. You know, what the hell? And brown sugar cinnamon's good. Again, if you toast it too much, it burns the roof of your mouth. You know? But now for breakfast, I'll have a Bloody Mary or coffee and toast or, I have my grape nuts and, every morning I want to wake up and make scrambled eggs but I just don't, I get up and I'm like, I don't feel like cooking anything. It's the same thing for dinner. A lot of times I'm like, I don't want to make anything. I eat SpaghettiOs right out of the can. I don't give a damn. I don't even heat them up. I'll just open the can up and eat them. And people are like, oh my God, that's disgusting. I'm like, no, it's not. It's actually good. I think it loses a bit of its taste when it's heated up. The sauce becomes very runny. Where if you eat it right out of the can, it's nice and thick. But, whatever. You do you. And, I'll do me. And, if you don't like what I'm doing, well, you shut the hell up. Alright? Okay, so we're gonna take our mandatory break. We'll be right back, and maybe we'll talk more about other stuff. Maybe. Alright. Be right back. And welcome back to the second half of this episode of Victims of Fun. Remember, you can email me at victimsoffun@mail.com. You can follow us on Anchor, Spotify, and Pandora. Make sure you hit the support button and throw me some cash, because you haven't done it yet and I need the money. Make sure you follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Just type in Victims of Fun and you'll see us. The logo is the same across all social media. There you go. So talking about breakfast cereals kind of got me a little hungry, but I'm good. I had conch fritters today. Conchs are kind of like this mollusk type thing that lives in the Caribbean. And they're especially in the Keys. And you catch them and you can cook them a whole bunch of different ways. If you ever see those really cool-looking, curved, horizontal-looking shells, anywhere, those are usually conch shells. So you get the conch, and I think the big ones are called queen conchs or whatever. So you get it. You can make it a couple different ways. I like conch fritters, and basically They're a fritter, so it's like a rolled dough thing with, and it's got conch in it. And conch fritters are just, let me tell you, when it's beautiful out and you're in the Caribbean side of Florida and you got a plate of conch fritters and a mojito or a land shark or something, and you got nice Caribbean music playing in the background, and you smell that salt air from the water, there's nothing better. But conch fritters are really, really good. I'm a big seafood thing. I've eaten like a lot of different types of seafood. Like almost anything that swims in the water, really, you can eat. I mean, you know, there's some fish you can't. But, you know, if somebody said, here, try this certain type of fish, I would try it, because I really haven't run into any seafood yet that I didn't like. I remember growing up New Jersey, right at the beginning of the Seaside Bridge in Ocean County, going into Seaside Island. I don't know if it's still there anymore, but there was a restaurant called Nick the Greek's. I think it was the Bay Bridge Inn. Anyway, that was like my favorite restaurant. I always got the same thing. I got flounder stuffed with crab meat. Oh, God. It's so good. And growing up in the Jersey Shore, I used to go out blue fishing all the time on the charter boats. And bluefish was very good. And my favorite, though, I mean, I'm a big shrimp fanatic. Like, I'll eat 3 pounds of jumbo shrimp in one sitting. I don't care. My cholesterol will go through the roof, but whatever. Lobster, definitely. Crab legs. But as far as fish, blackened grouper sandwich. Oh, my God. That is just, like, the greatest thing in the world. And it's expensive because groupers are kind of, like, protected. And there's a permit. You're only allowed to catch, like, a couple a year. But I remember going to Anna Maria Island in Florida, and I don't know if it's still there anymore. It's called the Rod and Reel. And people would pull up to the Rod and Reel because it was on a pier out in the Caribbean. And they would sell their grouper to the restaurant, and the restaurant would buy it and then put it on the menu. And it was like, and people would sit there and wait. If they didn't have any, they'd sit there and wait. And I waited an hour once for somebody to bring in a grouper. Then I waited another hour as they cleaned it and prepped it and got my sandwich. But I'll tell you, it was worth a 2-hour wait. Plus, I had like 3 gin and tonics and 2 mojitos while I was waiting. And, you know, thank God for Uber. Just Ubering around the island. But, I've had whale, which is not a fish, but it's in the water. I had whale in Japan. It's, you know, it's all right. You know, I don't see the big appeal to it. And I tried that poisonous pufferfish. I tried that. That's actually very, very good. That's got to be... You have to, like, go to school in Japan for that for, like, 7 years before you're allowed to serve it. And I don't know if it's true or not. I don't know if they tell us just to the tourists. But, I mean, I was more than a tourist, so maybe it's kind of true, but when at some very upscale restaurants, when somebody orders it, the chef who prepared it has to watch you take the first bite, because if he did it wrong and he just poisoned you, because there's no cure, you're dead in 10 minutes. So he's supposed to stand there and watch you. And if you start showing signs that you've been poisoned, he is supposed to take out his knife and commit ritual suicide and die before you. Because the idea is that he would be waiting for you in the afterlife, because now he's got to serve you forever because he was responsible for your death. And I'm thinking to myself, well, what if I just fake it and this guy kills himself? I'm like, oh, no, wait. I just had gas. You know, like what happens? I don't know if that's true or not. I've never heard of it happening. And I actually looked it up. And supposedly since World War II, because after World War II, there was a lot of restrictions in Japan imposed by the Americans. And one of them was on the whole restaurant fish, basically the schools for the were shut down, but since the end of World War II, I think they said only 14 people have died, and like 10 of those people tried to prepare it themselves, and that's what killed them. So, you know, I think that's just something they tell you to make it seem like, you know, oh God, this is so dangerous, but you literally, when you're learning how to prepare this, you're basically, for 7 years, you're eating it yourself instead of feeding it to other people just in case. But, you know, that could be just bullshit they make up just to, you know, it's kind of like touristy thing. But, you know, I remember, you know, my grandfather catching a whole bunch of crabs in New Jersey and my grandmother just throwing them in the pot boiling. And you know, you get some of that Maryland Bay seasoning and whatnot, and you sit there and eat crabs all night. It's fantastic. And lobster, oh God. When I was doing that volunteer work in Honduras, I had a student whose parents owned the biggest lobster fleet in La Ceiba. That's where I was. And they said that, you know, if you pass our son, every Friday we will give you a bag of lobster tails. And so every week I got a bag of lobster tails, and every week I passed him on his tests, and he ended up paying. He couldn't speak hardly any English, but I was getting lobster tails. You know, I remember I would cook all these lobster tails up and put them on Facebook and show my family. And my uncle would get pissed off. He'd be like, "You're supposed to be doing volunteer work and you're eating lobster tail every night." I'm like, "Well, yeah, you know, it's good volunteer work." But you just, you know, you just take the lobster and you just, you know, cook it up and melt some butter and there you go. Man, it's just the greatest thing in the world. And, you know, you think about it, lobsters are just giant cockroaches. I mean, they belong to the same family. They're insects, basically, that live in the water. And they're in the same, what's that scientific term, phylum or family or whatever? I think it's phylum, I don't know. But anyway, they're insects. Cockroaches and lobsters are like kind of T-Rexes and chickens. They're very, very similar. That blows my mind that the closest living relative to a Tyrannosaurus rex is a chicken. And there's a lot of scientists who think that T-Rexes actually looked like chickens, because they said if you strip away the feathers and the meat from a chicken, the skeleton kind of looked like a T-Rex. And they're saying, well, if that's the case now, and there's this whole movement in science that says that dinosaurs were all feathered, and there's a half people saying they weren't, and there's fighting over it, and some scientists had feathered T-Rex paintings made, and they look like giant chickens. I mean, their forelimbs look like wings, like little wings with claws on the end. And they're saying, this is what a T-Rex really looked like. I'm like, it's a giant chicken. It kind of ruins Jurassic Park. You know, I mean, what? You know, if I had a time machine, and I went back then, and I saw a T-Rex and it was a giant chicken, I wouldn't be scared. I'd be laughing my head off. You know, I'd whip out the barbecue sauce and I'd go after them, because that'd be dinner, you know. But you couldn't survive back then, because the oxygen in the atmosphere was too much. I think they said a human would only last like maybe 15 minutes, and I don't remember if it was not enough oxygen or too much, but basically you wouldn't be able to breathe it for too long. So the whole idea of going back in time is just like, for the dinosaurs, is you wouldn't survive. But yeah, they're just giant chickens walking around, just clucking their way. I mean, God, what if Colonel Sanders lived back then? It'd be the end of that. But, you know, chickens are just T-Rexes. I mean, birds are dinosaurs. See, a lot of people don't realize that, is that birds are in the same family as dinosaurs. They're classified as dinosaurs. So, if somebody says dinosaurs are extinct, actually they're wrong, because birds are in the dinosaur family, and birds are actually dinosaurs that survived the extinction event. So, it's like people who say the United States is a democracy. It's not. It's a representational republic. But, you know, people just accept it as that because they don't know any better, because people are stupid. So, anytime you have a parakeet, you're basically keeping a velociraptor in your house. And you're very careful, because one day that bird's going to remember its ancient ancestors and it's going to come after you. Yeah. You see, I was all into dinosaurs when I was growing up as a kid. I had, like, tons of dinosaur books, and it's weird now that they're all wrong. I still have them in storage, and they're all wrong. Like, everything in those books that were supposedly the truth are wrong. Like, I have a very famous book from the 70s that shows the dinosaurs, and it shows a T-Rex walking upright, like a human, and dragging its tail. And that's anatomically impossible because it would have snapped its spine. And now we know that T-Rexes and two-legged dinosaurs did not walk upright, and they did not drag their tails. Their tails were held out, and they kind of walked almost like a hunched over type of thing, almost like a predator. They weren't standing straight up like humans. And I remember two of the things was, oh, the front legs of the T-Rex were useless and just dangled there. Well, now they prove that each forelimb of the T-Rex could lift 400 pounds, and that they really used for mating, or they were used to push the T-Rex off the ground because they had to sleep sometime and they slept laying down. And just because he couldn't touch his chin or anything with the arms doesn't mean he couldn't use them. And like, I remember that they, like Stegosauruses, they said that those plates were armored, and it turns out that they're actually hollow and brittle, and they were used to cool the dinosaur. They weren't used for weaponry. And now they're saying that Triceratops, those horns and everything, were basically the same thing. They were actually not defensive weapons. They were just for cooling purposes, and they were actually hollow. And that the whole idea of a Triceratops charging and stabbing and killing a T-Rex is like bullshit. Ruined my childhood, basically. You know, because that was the big thing, you know, T-Rex versus a Triceratops. And, I mean, even Velociraptors. Everybody, you know, like you watch Jurassic Park, you think Velociraptors are like, you know, 6.5, 7 feet tall, basically dinosaur xenomorphs that are just going to come and kill you. And actually, Velociraptors are the size of turkeys. The dinosaur you see in Jurassic Park that's a Velociraptor is something completely different. But Steven Spielberg said that the name, I forget the name of that dinosaur that you actually see in Jurassic Park that they call Velociraptor. It's got some boring name. And Spielberg's like, well, the name Velociraptor is much cooler, so we just called those dinosaurs Velociraptors. Well, duh. Now an entire generation of people think Velociraptors are actually that animal when they're actually the size of a turkey. And if a real Velociraptor came after you, you could literally punt that thing into the next yard. Seriously. I mean, you know, has a turkey ever chased you? Unless you're a complete coward, it shouldn't, because, you know, you can kick that thing and just launch it 50 feet in the air. You know, if a Velociraptor comes at me, I'm just going to kick it, and I'm going to get 3 points. It's the other one you got to worry about. I forget its name. But, you know, remember, what else? Oh, T-Rexes couldn't swim. Well, T-Rexes can swim, so there you go. And they said in that book, it's like, well, these sauropods, brontosauruses and brachiosauruses, they spend all their time in the water because their bodies are too big for the land. Well, guess what? That turned out to be bullshit, too. And actually, those big sauropods could sit back on their hind legs and rear up and get leaves on the top of the trees. And I remember reading in a book that, oh, you know, a T-Rex would attack a brontosaurus or a brachiosaurus and eat it. And apparently that's a bunch of bullshit, because the sauropods were so big that T-Rexes would not go near them, because one hit from the tail would literally kill a T-Rex instantly. And they just did not attack them unless they were juvenile or they were already half dead. They just would not do it. They did say that that dinosaur that's not a velociraptor, the bigger one, that would attack them because they hunted in packs. So you'd have like six or seven of them. But a single T-Rex cannot take down a giant sauropod. It's just the sauropod's tail or whatever. I mean, sit on it, you know. Just, that's the end of that. You know, and I'm trying to think what else. I never saying that pterodactyls, like the flying dinosaurs, they could never land because their legs were too weak. But they never explained, like, what they did when they weren't flying. You can't fly all the time. Well, it turns out that they could walk on land, and they used their... Their wings were basically their forearms with membranes, and they could walk on all fours. And then just take to the air. So, they could do that. But this book was... You know, when I was a kid, I was, like, eating this stuff up. I'm like, whoa! Look at all this. This is so cool. And then you find out it's all a bunch of bullshit. You know, I still have those books. I wonder if they're worth anything. I'll put them on eBay and sell them. So what was my favorite thing? Yeah, and you have this one dinosaur. It's got a really thick skull. You know? Like, its brain case is, like, covered with, like, 8 inches of bone or something. I forget what its name was, but it would headbutt you to death. And, oh yeah, then you had all the dinosaurs that lived in the water. But that book didn't really have too much in them other than, like, plesiosaurs, because I guess they hadn't discovered the rest of them yet, or they weren't well known. But they had plesiosaurs, which, you know, is a Loch Ness monster, and ichthyosaurs, which basically look like dolphins, except they're reptiles. Literally, they look like dolphins, but they're reptiles and not mammals. And, I'm trying to think what else. What are those dinosaurs that I like? Well, I mean, you know, dinosaurs are cool. It's neat sometimes to see in the news some new dinosaur discovery. Like, they found that, now, it belongs to the ankylosaur family, that thing that's, like, basically a walking tank. But I don't know if it was actually an ankylosaur or not, but it was an armored dinosaur, and they found the most perfectly preserved fossil of it. And you look at it, and the scientists who found it and are examining it and put it on display or said, basically, it's the closest look at what it looked like when it was alive. I mean, that's how well preserved. I mean, it had skin pigments and everything. That's how well preserved it was. It was just, they said it's the closest thing you're going to get to a living dinosaur, the way this thing was preserved. It's like incredible. And then I read that they actually extracted soft tissue from a T-Rex fossils. And I remember reading that when they did the first one, they said, well, no, this isn't soft tissue. This is some sort of bacteria. But then they started grinding up more T-Rex fossils, and they started finding more soft tissue. And suddenly everybody, all these scientists who were saying that was impossible, are like, oh, wow, yeah, look at that, T-Rex soft tissue. Because, you know that saying they have nowadays, believe the science. Well, yeah. Uh-huh, yeah, there's an example why you shouldn't believe the science. But, let's see if they could clone one. They're supposedly the Russians, and the Russians, you gotta hand the Russians credit for this. They just don't care. There's no Greenpeace, there's no World Wildlife Federation. If the Russians want to experiment on animals or crossbreed things or something, they're going to do it because nobody's going to say anything to them. And if they do, the Russians are just going to either throw them in a gulag or just ignore them. So, the Russians want to clone a woolly mammoth. And they have already set aside something like 455,000 acres in Siberia for these things to live. And they want to open up a whole tourist thing where you can come and see woolly mammoths in their natural habitat. And there's frozen woolly mammoths all over Russia and Siberia. And they've been grabbing as many as they can. And a lot of these mammoths are so well preserved that, you know, they pull them out. They've got fur. The skin is there. The DNA is there. I mean, I remember I saw a documentary. They found one. It was a baby. And it still had the smell from when it was alive. Because it was flash frozen or something. And had all its hair. And the food in the stomach wasn't even digested. And I remember looking at this thing. I'm like, this thing could get up and start walking right now. And I wouldn't be surprised because it looks like it's just asleep. So the Russians have this idea of cloning a woolly mammoth. And creating their own Jurassic Park thing. I think the problem is inbreeding. They would have to clone a lot of them because if they want the woolly mammoths to reproduce naturally, they can't have, you know, like an inbred population. You'd have a bunch of, you know, hillbilly woolly mammoths running around. Hey, Jethro! You know, type of thing. So they want to do that. I don't know about that. But they said that basically, you know, when the woolly mammoths were alive, the earth was basically like it is right now. The oxygen levels were the same. The weather was the same. The continents were all in the same place. Everything was the same. I mean, human beings and woolly mammoths coexisted for a long time. There were actually woolly mammoths alive when they were building the pyramids. They were living on Wrangell Island. And there was another population living somewhere, I want to say California or so, but there was another small population that was still alive, and they were alive when the pyramids were being built. And there's Native American stories of encountering these things out in, you know, west and wherever. But, so it's basically the blink of an eye that they've been dead. And there's actually a lot of people saying that there's still a population alive in Russia. There were you gotta remember something. Russia is so big. There's a lot of Siberia that's never been explored or just hasn't been, or is just, you know, deserted, frozen wasteland. And if you're gonna hide a large land mammal somewhere, that's the place you want to put it. Because good luck finding it. And, during or after World War I, there was a hunter who swore he encountered one and gave a very, very vivid description of it and described it in a way that scientists said, well, no ordinary person is going to make this detailed of an explanation of this thing. Like, he was describing things that basically the scientists knew from the fossil record, you know, how this thing looked, and they're like, well, you know, maybe they're still out there, but who knows. I don't know if I like the idea of cloning. I mean, they can't clone dinosaurs. Even if they did, the atmosphere back in the day of dinosaurs was completely different, and I remember after the whole Jurassic Park thing, the scientists were saying, well, even if you could clone a dinosaur, it would die in a half hour. I mean, they said it could be born perfectly formed with no defects, but it would literally die in a half hour because it could not breathe the air we have now, because the oxygen content was a lot higher back then, and their lungs and their systems were set up for that. You'd have to put it in a controlled environment, in a room where the oxygen content was pumped up like a lot more for this thing to survive. And said, but, you know, what are you going to do? Are you going to clone a dinosaur and keep it locked up in a room? Because you would have to do that. And then, how are you going to maintain that dinosaur? Because human beings can't breathe that atmosphere either for more than like 15, 20 minutes. Because believe it or not, oxygen is actually poisonous and it's very toxic. It's just we're used to breathing it at a certain level. But pure oxygen, you know, oxygen is a very, very destructive gas. And you know, walk into your biohazard suit to take care of the T-Rex that's going to kill you. I mean, I think they explain it in the Jurassic Park books that, yeah, they actually do. I remember the scientist character, the Asian scientist guy. What was his name? Anyway, the guy who designed all the dinosaurs, he even said in the book, these aren't... Oh, yeah, he was talking to one of the characters, John Hammond. He was talking to John Hammond. He said, you realize these aren't really dinosaurs. And Hammond's like, well, of course they're dinosaurs. And the scientist goes, no, they're not. They are what we think that dinosaurs are. He said, a real dinosaur would not survive in our environment because of the lungs and everything else. So we've changed them to become what we have grown up believing a dinosaur should be. But these aren't really dinosaurs. Which I remember the whole one of the things in the book was the guy wanted to... Basically, he wanted to kill all the scientists. Is like, we need to reboot the animals. And by that, he meant the animals need to be destroyed and regrown and modified to make them more docile. And Hammond's like, what do you mean more docile? And he said, you know, he starts saying, well, you know, the velociraptors are extremely intelligent and break out of their cages. The T-Rexes are hyper predatory. You know what? He said, these animals are uncontrollable. He said, we need to dial down their aggressiveness quite a bit if we're going to show them. And John Hammond's like, no, they have to behave like they were in the wild. And that was part of the problem at Jurassic Park. The reason the velociraptors got out is because velociraptors, well, the things that were supposed to be velociraptors, but they're not really, were very intelligent and aggressive, and the scientists want to tone them down to make them basically like friend, not friendly, but like, you know, basically just, ooh, you know, I'm a dinosaur. But still, I wouldn't mind seeing a live dinosaur. I mean, I could go to Kentucky Fried Chicken and eat a dinosaur if I want, but, you know, I'm not gonna. I don't know, if I was a T-Rex and I found out that my descendants were being made extra crispy or original recipe, I'd be pretty pissed off. I'd be like, get me to a time machine. I'll show these stupid humans. Of course, then when the T-Rex shows up, he's going to be like, ah, I can't breathe. That's the end of that. I don't know. Alright, so that's about it for this episode of Victims of Fun. Remember, you can email me at victimsoffun@mail.com. Make sure you follow us and listen to us on such great places as Anchor FM, Spotify, and Pandora. Remember, you can follow us on Facebook. You can follow us on Instagram. You can follow us on Twitter. Just type in Victims of Fun and you'll see the logo. And make sure you hit the support button under Spotify and everywhere where you listen to us, and start throwing me some money, because it's getting expensive to keep this podcast going, and I can afford it, but I'd rather you pay for it. Yeah, that's about it this time. We will see each other next time on Victims of Fun. I hope you all have a wonderful evening. I'm going to order a strawberry daiquiri now and light up a cigar and enjoy the sunset. So, take care, be safe, and remember, love each other. Bye-bye.